He has a lot of DUIs.
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah.
He's got like five.
I don't think he's allowed to even be within 100 feet of a car.
Yikes.
His watch is like a freaking breathalyzer. That's...
Yeah.
That guy's got problems.
It does.
Well,
He was in
let's.
Flatliners, you know.
Yeah, he died in that and then he came back to life.
Yeah, well, it was almost a good movie. I just turn it off after he dies, and I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good movie.
He's got like a kid beating the shit out of him for 90 minutes.
He the one getting beat up by the kid, or is it Kevin Bacon gets beat up by? No, Kevin Bacon has the black girl that he's like racist to. Like he called her like names and stuff like that.
Oh, I actually have that
Like,
movie in my hand right now.
oh yeah, you should pop it in. It's terrible.
Some lines shouldn't be crossed.
The 80s were big on taglines.
Oh shit!
That'll be that should be a fun game. We'll give modern day movies an 80s day
That'll be
tagline.
fun. On the back of the DVD, it says, "Are you afraid to die?" Kiefer Sutherland isn't.
Good for Kiefer Sutherland, looking death in the eye and spitting in its face.
God damn it! I get it!
This crap is terrible.
I was titillated.
I know you want to go.
No, I slept with like three girls a night and no one ever said anything.
Dude!
Oh god, you guys are disgusting.
Boring.
So boring.
That is an amazing film.
Ooh, I love me some Statham.
That's a little bit of brilliance that just came out of your mouth there, Justin. I like it.
Do you want to keep going?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Cavender, and as always, I'm joined by Amanda and David. Randy can't be here tonight because it's his birthday, and not only that, he's also sick. Poor little thing. But I ask you two that are here with me, how's it hanging?
Good.
Super excited. Yeah.
Yay! I'm actually pretty fabulous, too. All things considered.
Well, I mean, I would have asked you, but it's pretty presumptuous of you to assume we were going to ask how you were doing.
That's how we do this show. There's a script.
I didn't get a script.
It's written.
Is that why you guys are always so good and I'm so shitty? You guys have the script? And
maybe.
I'm just wailing off of nowhere?
It's possible.
Yeah. Possible, not probable.
Anyway.
Strike that, reverse it.
Some sad news, even though we're laughing. It's nothing to do with what happened over the weekend, but Academy Award winner, Philip Seymour Hoffman, he died. Sad.
It is sad.
Of course, it was, apparently, it was a drug overdose. I am not a medical examiner, nor have I read any kind of reports, but that's the assumption, right, that it was an overdose?
But you do watch Grey's Anatomy, and so yeah. You watched all those seasons, so you probably got as much training as most doctors nowadays.
Right. I could bring somebody back to life.
That's right.
Just whack on their chest a couple times, call out some command. You need a couple of CCs or something. Stat.
Yeah, saline cures everything. It's like the new penicillin.
Yeah, it's the magic juice.
You make it warm.
Poor guy. We like most of his movies, whether he
oh, yeah.
has a small role or a large role. Either way, he steals the show. Man's fantastic. Was fantastic.
Well, he'll live on forever in his films, so he'll always be fantastic.
I agree. In fact, we're going to touch on, I think, our top 10 favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman roles by the time this podcast is finished. How does his death affect those freaking Hunger Game movies?
Well, his character, the Game Master, who's, I guess, not the Game Master since he's no longer in the Capitol, spoiler alert, is a pretty important character in the novel Mockingjay, so... Theoretically, the movie Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2. But his character is kind of interesting in that he's always present, but really never seen. So the official word from Lionsgate is that he had completed all of his filming for Mockingjay Part 1 that'll come out this year, but he had 7 days of filming left for Mockingjay Part 2, which comes out in 2015. They don't plan on delaying production. They don't plan on delaying the release dates. The movies will come out as planned next year. And the year after. So it sounds like everything is going to be able to be filmed around. It's not like the death of Paul Walker, who was a central character to the Fast franchise. The Hunger Games will go on. And as someone who read the novels, I think it'll be pretty easy to shoot around him. Because like I said, especially in part two, he's rarely in it. He's an important character, but he's kind of a behind-the-scenes character. So I think they'll be okay. So... Hunger Games fans, don't worry. His meaty parts were in part one, and he's already filmed those.
I don't even know how to say his name in that movie.
Game Master Plutarch?
Plutarch Havensby?
Yeah.
There you go. I have this bad thing when I read. I kind of skip over names. I recognize them as, characters' names, but if they're, a funny spelling, I don't take the couple seconds to, recognize how it's said. It's real bad in Star Wars, because all these characters have, apostrophes and, Ys and Qs.
Right.
I just kind of know who the character is and, what the general formation of their name is, but I never worry about, pronunciation. So it's probably a dyslexic fault of mine.
Right.
How do you remember who anyone is?
Well, I mean, I knew he was Game Master, something like Plutarch Havensby, you know? So when they mention him, I'm like, oh, yeah, there he is. But, I don't know. Weird like that.
You are.
He was going to be in a TV show, too, wasn't he, on Showtime?
Yeah, he was supposed to star in this show called Happy-ish that was going to be on Showtime. And, I mean, it pretty much just was going, judging by the synopsis, the description of the show itself was not very well fleshed out, which I guess just goes to show you how early in development it was. But for those who haven't heard about the show, it's about this guy named Tom Payne, who is, everything is just generally going bad for him in life. He is on erectile dysfunction pills that don't work. He's also on antidepressants. I'm guessing that he works in some kind of entertainment or media thing, because the storyline talks about a culture that reveres youth, a culture that he helped create, and he needs to figure out his purpose now that he's halfway to death and nobody cares what he thinks anymore. Sound like it was going to be a pretty depressing show.
Yeah.
What else we got in TV news?
If you watched the Super Bowl, then, or if you watched all the way through, then you probably saw the commercials for the new season of 24 that's going to be airing later this year. It's just going to be sort of like a summer season, so it's only 12 episodes?
Correct.
Yeah, so it'll be shorter.
It'll still be 24 hours, but it's just going to be 12 episodes.
Right. And it's going to premiere on May 5th, and we're going to see Jack Bauer again. I believe it takes place 2 or 3 years. No, wait. It was longer than that.
I just know it's in London.
Yeah.
Yeah. You sound like you're from London.
Yeah, so it's going to take place in London. If you watched the Super Bowl, then you saw those, brief little snippets of, some kind of havoc happening, but then it would suddenly cut away some kind of glitch, but it was all just building up to the reveal that 24 is coming back again.
What else we got in TV news besides Mr. DUI?
I think the last thing we were talking about was the possibility of Seinfeld reunion.
So
Seinfeld was on a radio show in New York saying that it wasn't a Super Bowl ad, and it wasn't just an episode of comedians driving in cars for coffee or whatever, and that it's short form, one-off thing, but it's huge. But I'm not really sure if there's actually going to be another thing, because there was a Super Bowl commercial. He did release an episode of comedians driving in cars for coffee with him interviewing quote-unquote George Costanza. So, I don't know. Justin, you seem to think that there's still something else, or that it's implied that they're actually working on another thing?
I think Seinfeld said that the project was not part of the short-form web series Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, nor was it a Super Bowl commercial, and that he said that the project is a shortish form and a one-and-done thing that will be available to watch very, very soon.
Talking about the project and in referencing the reunion project was stating that it wasn't one of the two things that are already out.
Right, so there would be a third thing. You like Seinfeld, right?
I do.
I think Dave's the only one that doesn't, but he watches it.
Yeah, I don't dislike it. I mean, I'll watch it occasionally when it's on. I have no. It's not like I dislike Friends. Oh. Like I don't see why everyone like goes crazy for it, but I understand like the humor behind Seinfeld, and I find some of the episodes funny. I just don't think it's like the greatest sitcom in the history of the universe.
It's pretty much is.
Yeah, see, I enjoy it. Like if we're on right now, you know, I might stick around and listen to it, but I don't know. I'd rather watch Alf.
Oh, speaking of Alf, I really like that one Super Bowl commercial where it was like Radio Shack.
Yeah.
And it was like the 80s called and they want the store back. Yeah. The whole time I was watching it, I was kind of laughing, but I'm thinking to myself, how is this store even still open? It's the dumbest store ever. It's overpriced. It just looks old and dirty. And then it ends the commercial showing like this whole remodeled kind of quasi Apple store look to it.
Yeah. Right.
I was like, you guys should have
real hard.
Yeah, I should have did that shit about 20 years ago. God, I hate that store. I hate it so much.
They're like, this whole business model is like weird adapters you can't get anywhere else unless you want to order them online and wait 3 days to get them.
Right.
Like, that's like their whole model.
So stupid.
Like, we got shit you can't find in like stores.
And batteries.
And batteries. But you can get batteries anymore.
My dad used to say Radio Shack makes a good battery.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'd like to see the stats on that one.
Yeah. It's alkaline, Dave.
Is that what it is?
You can't get an alkaline battery anywhere else.
Wherever would you find an alkaline battery?
That's what the guy at Radio Shack said.
Our alkaline is like pure alkaline. It's like Colombian cocaine pure.
Right. It's like weapons grade.
Yeah. Weapons grade alkaline.
Cool. Is that it in TV news?
Yep, that's it for TV news. What about you, Dave? What's going on in movies?
Speaking of TV news, there's news in movies too. Actually, the first one's kind of a movie / book news. Sorry, it's a slashy. It's kind of like in Zoolander. But the first one is just J.K. Rowling recently came out, had an interview with Emma Watson, and in which she said that she kind of regretted hooking Hermione and Ron up. That when she originally envisioned the story in her head, it was always Hermione and Ron. But as the tale progressed and as like she got more versed in how literature works, she thinks that Hermione should have gotten with Harry, but she just had it so much in her mind that Hermione should have gotten with Ron. And now looking back at the whole saga, she almost regrets it. And that if she had her way, she would have preferred that Hermione end up with Harry. So you'll remember that J.K. Rowling's, you know, right after Deathly Hallows came out, told everyone that Dumbledore was gay. She's gone on a lot of tangents about what Neville Longbottom has done. And so I don't know what you guys thought of, you know, it's so ingrained that Hermione and Ron are together. Could you picture Hermione and Harry, and how do you think that would have affected the story?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a horse in this race, and I didn't even realize how passionately people felt about this until she said that.
Right, shippers.
I didn't realize. I mean, I knew that there were shippers. I understand the concept of shippers and that shippers exist for every movie and TV and book and whatever.
What is a shipper? Can you define that for our listeners?
Oh, sorry. So for those who aren't aware, shippers are people who advocate for two characters in a story who aren't together and think that they should be together.
Like Bella and Jacob.
Yeah, this is not to be confused with slash fic. It's a totally different thing. But, well, sort of different thing. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I don't have a huge opinion either way. I mean, I think it makes sense how that Ron and Hermione ended up together, except maybe, you know, Ron might not have been the kind of intellectually challenging person that I would have expected Hermione to gravitate towards. But I mean, in terms of like Harry's relationship status, I think the fact that he is with Ginny is more irritating than the fact that he's not with Hermione. I mean, Ginny was a terrible character.
Huh. Pretty bad.
She doesn't say a whole lot.
Yeah. She basically just exists to hook to eventually end up with Harry.
And if Harry took Hermione, Ron would have to get with his sister.
I kind of like the idea of Hermione and Ron being together. To me, it worked because of the whole opposites attract. You know, I think that those two balance each other out pretty nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. And I just think that in most cases, it would seem normal for Harry to get with Hermione. In any other world, in like the Hollywood universe, those two would belong with each other. You know, mm-hmm. the main character having a romantic interest and it being her. But I think that's one of the reasons why I liked Hermione and Ron's relationship, is because it wasn't something that I necessarily expected at first. And when it happened, I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
Yeah, I like Ron and Hermione together as well. I would have actually preferred that just Harry just sadly got asked out in the relationship, and I'm not particularly fond of Ginny, and her only purpose is to breed Harry a couple sons, to where it almost would have been better if it just had been, you know, one, the core couple of Ron and Hermione, and Harry's just kind of like Uncle Harry, who wants a knee ride, wants to hop on my knee.
All right. Oh, well.
That's my thought.
And I don't think... I feel kind of weird about writers coming out after their stuff is published and having regrets about something. I think if they do regret something, that maybe they should keep that, you know, a secret. You know what I mean? Because it affects people that reread the stuff. And mm-hmm. then you feel like, you know, you're not getting what they really wanted. I think maybe that's why George R. R. Martin might take 50 years between books with Game of Thrones, because he wants it to be what he wants it to be.
Yeah, he keeps changing his mind.
Yeah, whereas Rowling was throwing these books out eventually pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that Rowling's may also... I think she's struggling to keep Harry Potter relevant until she can get the new books and the new movies out. And so I'm not surprised that she said stuff like this just to...
Yeah, she comes out every few months and says something.
Yeah, so I think she's just trying to keep the brand relevant in you know, this culture where, you know, people have kind of moved on from Harry Potter to other young adult series and to other adult series like the Game of Thrones books. And even in films, you know, the Harry Potter saga is, you know, a great saga, but, you know, it's starting to get eclipsed by, you know, the Hunger Games and all these other that are coming after it. So by her bringing up, you know, a pretty controversial topic that she knows people will discuss, it brings Harry Potter back to the forefront. So maybe she's just a brilliant marketer.
I think she just needs to let it go.
I think she's just a terrible writer.
Not the best, no. I mean, but
I mean, just like looking at this whole pairing up of all the characters, like, why does she even need to do that? They're 17 years old. Like, who at the age of 17 ends up with someone that they knew in high school?
Dave, the bad
Justin.
Ever.
The 66% of this podcast.
Well, but she does it, she did it for every single character in those books. Right. Everybody paired up with someone.
Right. No, I
it's like, understand. Why? Why do you need to do that?
But I mean, sure, Rowling wasn't a great writer, but when you chalk her up next to the other YA novelists, you know, like Suzanne Collins for The Hunger Games, or Stephanie Meyer for Twilight, or the Divergent author, or the kid who wrote like the Aragon books, I mean, she's like Hemingway. She's compared to these other people that, you know, Suzanne Collins is terrible. Like her writing style and everything is terrible, and she's a huge success to where Rowling, you know, there's a big difference in her style between Sorcerer's Stone and Deathly Hallows, and she definitely improved as an author. And she started out writing books for kids, and she ended up writing books for teenagers. And I think that she really progressed as an author, and I think she could have easily copped out and, you know, The Hunger Games came out a year apart. I mean, that's hammering books out. And so I think that for what she had to write, she did a pretty good job. I think the Harry Potter books ended up pretty well written. Sorry.
And I think I noticed that too with, like, Goblet of Fire. You know, every other sentence wasn't Harry Potter who lived on number 4 Privet Drive who has a scar on his head that came from blah, 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 blah. And I was like, God damn it, I don't care. I know this already. Stop.
I get it. goddamn exposition every 5 seconds.
Yeah, it was brutal. And, you know, it got dark pretty quick, especially at the end of Goblet of Fire and then into Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah, I think the second Order of the Phoenix Cedric.
That kind of kicked it up a couple notches.
You're like, what just happened? Someone died?
And it was kind of uncomfortable, too. Like, how when Harry was getting tortured by Umbridge, you know, she was just so mean to him. And then, I will not tell lies, getting burned into his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of hard to read. I was like, God damn, I hate this bitch. I dare say she's a C word. And it was frustrating. And that was a different kind of reading than the other books.
Yeah, it totally shifted gears. Yeah. And then Six did it again. Six shifted gears the other way towards, like, Harry's greatest year ever. Like, everyone, it's all, like, happy.
Dying. It's like, he's on cloud nine. This is like,
yeah, and then at the very end.
And that was hard, too, when Dumbledore's scared and he just keeps feeding him and keeps saying, here, Professor, you got to keep drinking.
Yeah. And
it's like, oh, my God, quit giving him that shit. That
was, and he's like a frail old man. He's like, I don't want any more, Harry. Yeah,
that was nuts.
Drink it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. And then everyone dies in Seven. Seven turns into a George R. R. Martin book.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Speaking of sentimental saps, we all know that the Amazing Spider-Man 2 is coming out, and he has just a truckload of villains. We know he's got Electro, he's got Rhino, and he's got some form of the Goblin, Green or Hob. Pick your poison. But Mark Webb, the director, actually unveiled that there may actually be another villain in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. BJ Novak, we all love from The Office, is slated to play a character named A. Smythe, who, if you're familiar with your Spider-Man lore, is probably going to be Alistair Smythe, the creator of the Spider Slayers, which are a group of robot beings that are created by his father, whose sole goal is to kill Spider-Man. Mark Webb said that BJ Novak will have a small part in this film, but BJ Novak said he's not an extra, but he does have a plot-centric purpose in this film. So, is four villains too many for a movie? What do you guys think?
Double it. Make it eight.
Wasn't that the problem with, like... Oh, my God.
Yes. Batman and Robin? Yes. Spider-Man 3? Yes.
Right. I was thinking Spider-Man 3. I was going to say Spider-Man 2, but I was like, no, wait, not Spider-Man 2.
Well, maybe they're trying to do it into a way where we're reminded that Peter Parker is a kid, and the pressure's going to get to him, and bad things are going to happen. Peter Parker is not a happy... He's not a happy hero. I think people forget that.
Wasn't Rhino also part of some group of villains?
The Sinister Six?
Yes, the Sinister Six. So does that mean we're gonna end up having six villains?
Yeah, the next movie is going to be this. It hasn't been confirmed, but all signs point to the third movie being the Sinister Six. Which would be, you know, Vulture, Electro, Dr. Octopus, you know, Doc Ock. Dr. Octopus sounds funny. And so, yeah, that's more than likely going to be the third Amazing Spider-Man. So maybe they're just gearing it up. So they go into four villains. So six doesn't seem like such a leap in the next movie.
Maybe. And I mean, I really think that it needs to be, you know, bad for Peter Parker, and he needs to kind of feel, you know, the world is against him, and I think that that's just going to make his whole story all the more tragic.
Yeah, Emma Stone's been throwing out terms like this is the Empire Strikes Back of the Spider-Man universe,
and to me that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the middle act of a trilogy.
Yeah, it's got to be bad. It's got to hit the fan, and then he'll rise up.
He's got the fan. Worse than being bitten by a radioactive spider and having your uncle die. Right. Your only father figure. Worse than that.
Yeah.
Which is now we're going to kill everybody.
And he's poor.
Yeah.
He's not a wealthy superhero. That's the thing. I was thinking about this the other day. There's so many superheroes out there that are just wealthy people in their everyday lives. And it just sends this message to me that you have to be rich to be a hero in the comic book universe.
Also, I think that happens a lot with protagonists in general, because it's more interesting if your characters have unlimited resources. Because then they can literally do anything.
But that's one of the reasons why I like Peter Parker, is because he is a kid. He does have, you know, a lot. I mean, he has a lot of emotions, but at the same time, which kid doesn't? And, you know, he's just trying to survive when it's all said and done.
I think. Yeah, I mean, how easy would it be for him to, like, use his powers for gain and, you know, get a lot of money or get a lot of success, you know? But he doesn't. He firmly believes that in what his Uncle Ben said, you know, and he's trying to, you know, better the world with his powers. So you got to admire that, Cotton.
I'm shocked. It's a bold strategy, Dave. I don't know how it's going to work out for him.
But, I mean, Mark Webb, I think he did an amazing job with the first Amazing Spider-Man. No pun intended, I guess. So I'm hoping that Electro will be the main villain, you know, for the climactic battle. And that the rest of them are just going to be kind of like... I think the Rhino is going to be a lot smaller character than people are thinking. I think that the Green Goblin is going to not be as much of a factor. And I believe that, you know, Alistair Smythe is just going to be a small person. I think that Mark Webb is just building this universe to where we're getting glimpses that these people exist in this universe. And Spider-Man is never going to be safe because there are always going to be all of these crazy people that are willing to do anything to just get rid of Spider-Man.
Which is funny because he lives in a city that has like more superheroes than knows what to do with them.
Right. Where's Wolverine, man? Where's everybody else? Where's Captain America when you need him? Speaking of the raddest things in the history of the universe, did you guys watch the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Did you watch the commercials?
Yes.
Did you see the Transformers commercial?
No, I didn't watch it. I didn't see it.
Oh my God!
I must have went to the bathroom.
I saw it. I definitely had a "what the fuck was that" moment.
Okay, so Justin, you haven't seen it. Let me paint you a picture with words here. All right. So it starts off. You see Mark Wahlberg. You're like, oh, it's a Mark Wahlberg. This is going to be good. And then stuff happens. Explosions, explosions, explosions. You're like, this must be a Michael Bay movie. And then there he is, Optimus Prime, looking all awesome and kicking butt and like cutting shit. And then I'm all like, oh my God, are we going to see Dinobots yet? Because the movie's Age of Extinction. It's going to feature Dinobots. And so, like, two-thirds of the way through, there's no Dinobots. I'm like, oh, my God, there's not going to be Dinobots? They're going to save it? They better show Dinobot. And then out of nowhere comes the pterodactyl, comes Swoop, and he's just tearing up Bumblebee. And I was all excited, like a little 9-year-old in me just squealed with excitement. And then they showed what I am assuming is going to be Galvatron, and I went a little more excited. And then all of a sudden, I'm all like, are they going to show Grimlock? And Optimus Prime comes charging through a wall, riding on the back of Grimlock. And I'm like, sold.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, the 9-year-old in me who could not ejaculate, just ejaculate. Because Optimus Prime riding Grimlock through a wall, done. This is going to be the best movie ever, just from that one scene. So just wanted to geek out a little bit of it. You should definitely Google Optimus Prime rides Grimlock or something like that, just to see the most ridiculous picture of that. I think everyone's kind of honing in on how enormous Grimlock is that Optimus Prime is riding on him. But I think they're missing the point. And if the canon was Galvatron, which I'm hoping he was, that makes me excited too. I'm not a big fan of Generation 2 Transformers, but I do love Galvatron.
Who is... Okay, so I watched the trailer while you were explaining.
No.
who is the green Transformer with the parachutes?
Not a clue. I mean, my guess would be, from the paint scheme, I would think it would be either Cup or Springer or Hound. It's going to be. I'd have to see what his vehicle form is. Mm-hmm. More than likely, it's going to be Hound. Hound was the like army jeep from the original series.
Yeah.
That's what I'm assuming. But Cup and Springer, they were both. I'm sorry, not Springer, just Cup. Cup is the one from the movie, the animated movie from the 80s that was always chewing on like a metal cigar. He was kind of like a grizzled veteran, and he turned into like kind of like a space jeep.
And who's the dragon, the two-headed dragon?
The two-headed dragon?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one I was assuming was Swoop.
Okay.
It was like the pterodactyl.
Yeah. That's cool.
I mean, they haven't said if that's what their names are going to be, or if they're just going to be the Dinobots. That's really my only complaint with the Michael Bay Transformer series, is that they've really hammered down the Autobots, and like, they've done a perfect job with Optimus Prime. Like, Optimus Prime is perfect, and he's exactly what I would assume Optimus Prime is. He's this ass kicker, this moral compass, and he's just rad. But the Decepticons, with the exception of, you know, Megatron, Shockwave, Soundwave, Starscream, they've all kind of been like just nameless Decepticons, and that's been kind of disappointing. To where they have, much like the Autobots, they have this whole army of Decepticons they could choose from, and they've chosen to kind of go faceless and nameless, and that's a little disappointing to me, especially when they could sell more toys if they named them after who they are. So I'm hoping that they don't go that way with the Dinobots. I hope the Dinobots don't come out as just, here's some Transformers that are dinosaurs. I'm hoping that they come out and they're Swoop, they're Snarl, they're Slag, they're Grimlock, you know, and that would make me happy.
Well, there you go. Yeah, and the second one, I felt like they just kept killing the same Decepticon over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, because Megatron and Starscream are off doing their own thing, and then it's just, no, random Decepticon number two. Kill him. Yeah. But that's really all I got in the world of the movie news. So you guys know what a brony is, right?
The My Little Pony thing?
Yeah, the guy My Little Ponies. They made a documentary called Bronies, and it's actually on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty good watch. You should check it out on Netflix. It's not that long. I think it's only like a 75-minute documentary. It's a short one. And it follows these people from all over the world that are bronies going to these conventions. And you would think that it's trying to make fun of them, but it's kind of sweet how they do it, to where the filmmakers kind of embrace the concept and they fixate on the positives of what these people are doing instead of the negatives. And so, you know, as someone steepled in geek culture like we are, it's always good to see when, you know, people that are passionate about something aren't mocked and are instead embraced for, you know, their passions. And so it's a really good documentary. I would love for people to watch it, to support it. It tells a really good message about people who are passionate about things. Called Bronies. And the extremely unexpected adult fans of My Little Pony. Don DeLance narrates it, and he's in it. You know, Q from Star Trek Next Generation.
I met him.
Yeah, he plays the villain in the My Little Pony series.
See, I added this documentary to my queue, but I remember it wasn't even like 3 stars when I added it to my queue, so I thought that people didn't really like it, so I haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know what it is now, but yeah, it's definitely worth watching, and like I said, it tells a pretty good message.
Oh my god. Oh, so Game of Thrones this weekend, right? No. Sorry, no. I got it confused with The Walking Dead.
April 6th or something.
April.
It's a way
so far away.
I didn't even watch like the last like 5 episodes of Walking Dead.
I don't want to watch it, you guys.
Oh, you review it, and I don't want to review.
No,
really, yeah, I'm kind of over it.
I think that's so funny. We were talking about this like 2 weeks ago. How I fucking hated this show forever, and you guys thought I was crazy, and it was so good, and now I'm finally liking it. You guys want to quit, and I don't get it.
Well, let's be fair. I never said you were crazy, Justin, because I didn't watch the show until like 5 months ago.
Oh.
Like, I never watched it. I didn't watch it until like there was like 3 episodes left in last season.
Oh.
Yeah. So I never called you crazy. I don't think it's a bad show. I just there's like no joy in it, and like it's just like depressing. It's a similar thing I have with like the Game of Thrones novels. It's just like, I get it. It sucks. Right. Why do I want to watch this? Like, it's terrible to be there. It's really not that much fun to watch. I mean, now they're out of the prison, maybe it'll be a little more fun. But I mean, there's like 2 seasons of them just like in a prison, and so it's a depressing setting in a depressing time, and people are dying, and nothing happy is happening. Like,
right? No, I
don't need it to be a comedy. I just need there to be some form of positive reason for me to watch it.
Right. And see, I like it. I like the idea of them being on the move. I never like it when they stay one place for too long. It's more fun when they go out and there's, you know, meeting new people and, you know, there's the trials and tribulations that come with survival against the elements.
Yeah, and I think if this really happened, that would be a more realistic portrayal of what would happen. But I guess it's just not financially feasible to film that way, I guess. They need a setting that they can just set up shop in.
And what I think also helps too is if they're out exploring and meeting new people, there's a chance of the audience connecting with a new character and then bringing them on the show. I think it gets old when you're just dealing with the same crew over and over and over again. And if it doesn't work out, then they get to kill them, and then the audience is rewarded with somebody dying.
Yeah.
And also, if they just, like, stay in one place, there's not really any conflict. I feel like that was a huge problem with the first half of the fourth season. Like, they kind of were trying to make the virus be the conflict, but, intangible villain like that is not super interesting.
For whatever reason, I started to enjoy The Walking Dead, and now, now I'm going to be alone.
Yeah, I think it's a well done show. I mean, if I had more time, I'd probably invest my time watching it. But it's just, I don't know. I get bored of, all right, what else bad can they do to these people?
Right.
Where else can we kick them? Who? What? And I think that if they were on the move, like you were saying, Justin, and they found new people, maybe that would help it. You know, because new people bring, you know, in theory, new joys, and they bring new personalities. So I mean, right now we're rooting for Daryl and Michonne. And, I mean, Herschel's dead, so I guess Maggie and Glenn. So you got four characters you care about, you know, and then 1,000 that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Not really 1,000, but like 25. And you know Carol's coming back eventually. I'm sure she'll show up this season. You'd be like, oh, I thought I was done with this broad. Tyrese is crazy.
I think it would be cool if she showed up as a zombie, and then the next episode we got to see how she became a zombie.
That'd be cool. Like at the very end of the episode, she shows up as a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their, because they like their cliffhangers at the end.
Yeah.
Stingers.
And then the next episode's like 13 days ago or something like that.
Yeah, I could get behind that. That'd be pretty cool. And then Rick would be just torn apart with guilt again, and he'd be like, oh, I don't want to be the leader. Oh, I can't be the leader. Look what happens. And the leader and people die. It's like, well, you weren't the leader and people died too.
I like Rick. I think he's a good character. I think that he has the weight of the world on his shoulders, and it shows. I have a fun top 10 list. I have 5. It's up to you guys to come up with 5 more. I took the liberty of making a list of my top 5 favorite roles that were played by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Do you want to give the audience what is on your list? And then, sure. You know, we can add a couple more.
Absolutely. So coming at number 5 for me was Along Came Polly. And that is where Hoffman plays the role of a washed up childhood actor named Sandy Lyle. And the movie itself isn't terribly funny. It has its moments. And I dare say that all the moments that are cool actually have Philip Seymour Hoffman in them. That scene that I added on the website, you can go to geeklegacy.com to see this list, and you will see him playing basketball, and it is just hilarious.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite of his roles, and it's funny.
Yeah, like just rain dance every time he shoots, he says out some crazy words. He's like, raindrops, let it rain. He's like white chocolate. It's hilarious. Oh, I love it to death. I actually saw it in the theater. Number 4 for me was Mission Impossible 3. He plays an arms dealer who is out to get the rabbit's foot. And the movie actually opens towards the end of the movie. And or the opening sequence of the movie kind of takes place at the end of the story. And you get to see just how brutal his character is in the first 3 minutes of this movie. And you're like, holy smokes, dude. It's hit the fan, and I'm nervous. This is kind of a different vibe for Mission Impossible, right? This is the one that was like first done by J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, it was J.J. Abrams' first one.
Yeah, and it just had a whole different kind of pace to it, and I really enjoyed the shit out of this one. It's probably my favorite one of the series. Number 3, Charlie Wilson's War. This movie is incredible. Give you a little history lesson on how crazy the 80s were. a lot of craziness was happening over in Afghanistan and Russia in the 1980s, and not too many people might be privy to that. They don't teach you that in high school.
It's still crazy.
It is still crazy. But his character is hilarious. Again, he's this guy named Gust, and this G-U-S-T, mind you, and he's this over-the-top, crazy spy guy that just is got a lot of anger issues and is just upset with the way the world works. And he just lights up the scenes every time he's in them. And it's incredible.
I enjoy the movie a lot.
Yeah. When he's like, He's talking to his boss, and he's like, "Yeah, you know, you're banging so and so's wife." He's like, "I'm not even gonna dignify myself with a response. Like, no, she's busy dignifying her up the ass." It's like, holy shit! And that's like one of the opening moments in the movie. So you're just like, "Oh, it's gonna be like this." And number two, Boogie Nights. Love this
good one.
It's incredible. This was just one of those movies that just hit me at the right time in my life, and I loved every second of it. And poor Scotty. So Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a character named Scotty, and he's just this kind of like a meek, I guess you could say, right? And he's just kind of this dude that gets brushed under the rug and no one pays much attention to, but Dirk Diggler, being the nice guy that he is, gives him the time that he deserves, and he, you know, kind of falls in love with him in a lot of ways.
I would say, yeah, in a lot of ways.
It's a pretty mad crush on him, but because Dirk is so nice, he doesn't, you know, turn his back on him. He just says, you know what, we're friends, and that's cool. But it's a heartbreaking moment when he kind of comes on to him, and he gets rejected, and we feel for him. I think that's pretty amazing.
It's possibly the most uncomfortable scene in the history of film.
It's pretty bad.
When he goes to kiss Dirk Diggler.
And then he makes it worse. He's like, "I just want to kiss you.
Do you want to
kiss me?" Yeah. He's like, "Can I kiss you? Can I kiss you on the mouth?" And he's like, "No." Well, do you want to kiss me? Like, dude, take a hint. It's not happening. Oh, it's brutal. And then he does the classic blaming it on the being drunk.
Yeah.
Which is not an excuse.
Dirk Diggler is just too nice.
It's too nice. We have that problem, too.
It's too nice. Every time I miss a phone with these guys.
Oh, I love that movie so much. Freaking, comment number one for me was Big Lebowski. He plays the role of Brandt, who is the personal assistant to Jeffrey Lebowski. And I think he's hilarious. Like, when he's going over his like awards and accolades and just kind of bragging about how amazing his boss is. And then even the scene when he's in the limo where he only says like three things, like, "This is our concern, dude." His facial expressions are just hilarious. Obviously, he's done several films, all of which, like Capote, for example, that's a good one where he got his Academy Award. But these five just happen to be my favorite roles.
Nice. Would you like me to round out your top five and your top 10?
Sure, do it.
Well, obviously the five you listed were amazing, but I could pick five other great roles since he was such a chameleon. If I were to go number five, I would go Patch Adams. It's a pretty good movie. It holds up. It actually holds up pretty well. I watched it not too long ago, and he plays the part of Mitch, who doesn't start out as a fan of Patch Adams, but he eventually grows to be one of his closest confidants in the film. So Philip Seymour Hoffman pulling it together in Patch Adams. And then number four, I put Capote, which Justin just mentioned. It was where Philip Seymour Hoffman got his Academy Award for Best Actor in 2005. He plays Truman Capote, you know, the terribly troubled author, and does an amazing job. Changes his voice and is just unrecognizable. Number three I put is Twister. He plays Dustin Davis in Twister. He plays kind of like the excited go-getter in the group. He's always
extreme, man.
he was the most fun person in the group, and he got to play opposite Bill Paxton. So I know that's always a good thing in Justin's book.
Yes, it is.
Number two, I put Moneyball. I'm a big fan of Moneyball, both the novel and the movie. He plays Art Howe, who was the manager of the A's at the time. Who had the difficult job of managing a team he didn't believe in. But as we know, the team ended up being pretty good. And so was Philip Seymour Hoffman, outshining Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill and everyone else who was on screen with him. And then
he basically just had his hands in his jacket pocket like the whole movie.
The whole movie. It's cold in Oakland. And I think that kind of like when Heath Ledger died, like I didn't feel bad. It didn't really hit me when he was like playing roles like the Joker and stuff like that. But when he was on screen in like The Knight's Tale or like 10 Things I Hate About You, it really hit me that like this guy was dead because he was so vibrant and alive on screen. And I think for me, for Philip Seymour Hoffman, it's going to be the movie Heart 8, which was Paul Thomas Anderson's very first feature-length film that he directed. Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a character named Young Craps Player. And the movie centers around Philip Baker Hall's character named Sidney, who is this big-time gambler in Reno. Not Vegas, but Reno. And John C. Reilly becomes like his underling and mentors under him. But there's one scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman is the guy rolling the dice in the craps game. And if you just go to YouTube and type in Philip Seymour Hoffman Heart 8, and you can watch the scene as he just berates Philip Baker Hall for being like an old dude. And he's like, I'm not going to wait for you, old dude. He's like, here, I'll do you a favor. I'll light my cigarette and then I'll roll. Okay. That'll give you time. Come on, dude. I'm lighting it. It's almost lit, dude. And, he's super young. He's got this big mane of red ginger hair. It's almost like a mullet. It's so big. And it's just great to see him so vibrant and alive, and he will be missed.
And you can actually watch Heart 8 on both Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Oh,
they weren't always there. I think they came in with the new year, to be honest with you.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a pretty good movie. It's got John C. Reilly, Gwyneth Paltrow, Samuel L. Jackson, Philip Seymour Hoffman, obviously Philip Baker Hall. So, yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
Well, I just like this movie in general, but 25th Hour, I think, is just an awesome movie that people should watch anyway. It's also starring Edward Norton, and he's a drug dealer who gets caught, and the movie shows like his life leading up to the point when he got caught, and also his last 24 hours before he has to go to prison for like 7 years.
And then it ends with him going to prison?
They imply that he does go to prison, yes. He's like sort of left with a choice at the end where he could run away. But the implication is that he sucks it up and goes to prison. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of his high school friends, and he plays that character who's awkward, but also yearning. He like kind of has a thing for one of his female students. He's a high school teacher too, so that makes it even worse.
I think we had a couple of Twitter action on Phil's one. Was there any more, Amanda? Was that at 25th Hour? Is that all you got?
Yeah. That's all I got.
Our regular listener, @Zombrigitte. Right, that's what we're calling her these days. She actually liked Lester Bangs, so that would be from Almost Famous, right?
Yep.
And then Capote and Charlie Mane. What movie is that?
Oh, Empire Falls. It's a TV movie.
Oh, that doesn't count. Our buddy, Stephen Alva Wood, who's co-host of Flipping the Nerd, he says, Ekik Legacy, your list nailed it. Big Lebowski and Boogie Nights were his best, and Twister was just really memorable. He'll be missed.
Twister!
Anyway, we are sad that he is no longer with us. I have a fun game. You guys want to play it?
What? Let's do it. Woo. Switching gears.
Yeah. Dropping the hammer, Harry.
Black hammer.
Yeah, Hebrew hammer.
Hmm.
The way it's going to work is Stephen Hawking is actually leaving the world of scientific discovery behind, and he wants to pursue a career in singing. And I don't know if you guys know this or not, but he's a big fan of Hollywood movies, and he actually came over to my house over the weekend and laid down some sweet tracks in my beat laboratory. And I thought it would be fun to share these with you and see if you guys can guess which movie theme song he is actually trying to sing.
Like, this is like world exclusive.
Yes. So all you have to do is guess which movie this theme song is from.
Now, is he creating an original theme song, or is this like the actual theme song from the movie?
Actual theme song from a movie. This is a real song that he is recreating. They're covers. Stephen Hawking covers.
Sweet.
They're amazing. They're breathtaking. And I hope you guys enjoy this game. As always,
Arthur.
Exactly. I didn't do that one.
Oh, what?
Because I thought it was too old and Amanda would not have seen it.
That's probably true.
I've seen parts of it.
Oh. Shout it out when you know it. If you guess wrong, obviously you cannot guess again until we move on to the next question. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Okay.
All right. So this will be a fun experiment.
You better lose yourself in the music the moment you own it. You better never let it go.
8 Mile.
Perfect. David, you are correct with 8 Mile. Lose Yourself by Eminem.
Yeah.
So. All right. Ready for the next one?
Ready.
God bless you, please, Mrs. Robinson. Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, 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 hey,
The Graduate.
That is correct. The Graduate. That is by, it's Mrs. Robinson by Simon and Garfunkel.
I think Hawkins rocks it better. I'd rather have his version.
All right. Next one.
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks?
Shaft.
Yeah, damn right.
Perfect. The Shaft theme song is sung by Isaac Hayes.
Woo!
And it's amazing, and everyone loves it. Amanda, you are in second place. Nothing to complain about.
I don't even know why we're playing this game. I have no chance.
Sure, to be fair, Randy has as many right as you do.
Right. I needed something fun and different, and it's been a while since Stephen Hawking has participated in our podcast. All right, next one.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left because I've been blasting and laughing so long.
Dangerous Minds.
Correct. That was a Gangster's
Been Path. Been spending most of my life living in a gangster. Sorry.
By Coolio.
What's Coolio up to? He had a cooking show for a while.
He says Shaka Zulu all the time instead of swearing. That's stupid. Guy's got problems. All right. Number five.
Rising up, back on the street, did my time, took my chances. Went the distance, now I'm back on my feet, just a man and his will to survive.
Rocky!
Perfect, Rocky. That was Eye of the Tiger by Survivor. Alright, next one. Coming in hot. Cool your jets, fly boy.
Out along the edge is always where I burn to be. The further on the edge, the hotter the intensity. Highway to the danger zone.
Top Gun.
Very good. Do you know that one, Amanda? The highway to the danger zone.
I know that song, but I wouldn't have associated it with Top Gun right away.
Yeah, that's hard. Alright, here's another one.
Hey, 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 oh. Won't you come see about me? I'll be alone, dancing, you know it, baby. Tell me your troubles and doubts.
Breakfast Club.
Yes, that was Breakfast Club. Freaking, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds. Next one.
You know it's hard out here for a pimp when he trying to get this money for the rent, for the Cadillacs and gas money spent. Because a whole lot of bitches talking
Hustle and Flow.
Perfect.
Oh my, 3-6 Mafia. I know the name of the band, sadly.
Hard out here for a pimp. That movie actually inspired me to write all of my naughty songs.
Sweet.
Trivia. Anybody that's ever heard the Justin Carpenter original knows that they are both offensive and horrible, but Hustle and Flow is the reason behind it. Not too many people know that part.
A little inside behind the curtain.
Right. All right, number 9.
Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
Titanic.
Titanic.
Very good, Amanda.
Finally.
Titanic. My heart will go.
Damn it. By Celine Dion. Screwed on my shutout.
I hear she's a stripper in Las Vegas now. It's crazy.
I don't think that's true.
No.
I don't think she performs there anymore either.
I've been to Vegas since 2005.
It's changed.
I heard that.
It's actually dirtier and seedier now. I don't know if it's just because I'm older now, and like I just didn't care when I was younger, but like it's pretty sketchy in a lot of places.
I think you probably just didn't care when you were younger.
Well, no, I don't remember. Like I said, I definitely don't remember because they used to have real strict rules about like street performers and people in costumes like taking pictures, and now the east side of the strip is just open and they don't care. They let whoever come and do whatever they want, and it's just I don't know, just kind of skeezy.
All right, number 10. Are you guys ready?
Hell yeah.
I hope life treats you kind and I hope you have all you've dreamed of and I wish you joy and happiness. But above all this, I wish you love. And I will always love you.
Bodyguard.
I was like, what? Whitney Houston.
Correct. The Bodyguard. I will always love you. Of course, she is referring to either her crack pipe or her husband, Bobby Brown.
Too soon.
Or Kevin Costner.
I like The Bodyguard. I wasn't prepared for the sister to be the bad guy.
No, that kind of comes out of nowhere.
She's just a jealous sibling.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. All right, and then doesn't really matter because David has won, but I have a bonus question. You guys ready for that one?
Heck yeah.
Question. Okay.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10. Feel the earth move and then hear my heart burst again. For this is the end. I've drowned and dreamt this moment. So overdue I owe them. Swept away, I'm stolen. Let the sky fall.
Skyfall?
Very good. We'll give that one to Amanda.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
As far as I can hear, Dave and I said at the same time.
Oh, there you go. Well, that does it for this week's episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Remember to tune into the other podcasts that we have on the Geek Legacy Network. There's the Comic Corner, which is hosted by Jeff and Tyler, where they review comics that are currently on their pull list, as well as the Pixelated Podcast, where Stephen K. Janes and I talk about video games and what's happening in the Pixelated universe. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitter there at Geek Legacy, and don't forget to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Stay fabulous. Thank you.